everybody. Hi there. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Whew. I'm anticipating a very exciting program, and I recommend all of us take a nice deep breath before we get started. My anxiety's up. How about yours? Every day, we learn about something new that's going on in the United States with our government that doesn't feel very good. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things today, connecting dots between one thing or another, and bringing it all back to my favorite subject, food. And I'm really excited because I finally talked to one of my favorite doctors and colleagues to take some time to talk to me. Dr. Milton Mills is on the program today. He practices urgent care medicine in the Washington, D.C. area and has served previously as Associate Director of Preventative Medicine and currently as a member of the National Advisory Board for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He has been a major contributor to position papers presented by PCRM to the United States Department of Agriculture regarding dietary guidelines for Americans and is the lead plaintiff in PCRM's class action lawsuit that asked for warning labels on milk. Dr. Mills earned his medical degree at Stanford University of Medicine and completed an internal medicine residency at Georgetown University Hospital. He has published several research journal articles dealing with racial bias in federal nutrition policy. He frequently donates his time via practicing at free medical clinics and travels widely speaking at hospitals, churches, and community centers throughout the country. And I just have to add that he is a super human being. Welcome, Milton. How are you?
I'm good, Karen. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
I'm giving you a big virtual hug.
And I'm hugging you right back. It's so good to be
I like to say on this
again.
Program that we tune in love. We tune in live and we tune in love.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the last time you were on this program was 5 years ago.
Wow. It's been that long. It doesn't seem that long.
We had a great conversation. I was reviewing the transcript before. A lot of people still access that program in the archives because I think they're looking for you, and I'm glad I have something to offer.
Awesome.
I feel like we've been connected because I've been reading a lot of your posts on Facebook for the last, a little more than 100 days, I think.
Yeah, and I still haven't been picked up by the NSA, so.
That's very good. So I want to start first talking about you and your work, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit more about some of these big issues that seem to be changing on a daily basis.
Sure.
Now, you're working in critical care, the ICU.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I was at work last night and, we had the usual, types of cases that we see in the ICU, patients with poorly controlled diabetes who are in a serious metabolic state called diabetic ketoacidosis, which means that they have such severe metabolic derangements that if they aren't admitted to the intensive care unit, put on IV medications, they are in danger of literally dying from their disease. And, I saw people with blood infections, pneumonias, heart disease, the usual kinds of acute manifestations of chronic diseases that we often see in Western countries that, again, are most, in most cases, related to the way that we eat and live.
I mean, I can't imagine, you've been doing this for such a long time, how profoundly frustrated you must be knowing that most of these cases shouldn't be there. They're not necessary. Diabetes, preventable, reversible.
Right, absolutely. I mean, heart disease. And even the patients who, for instance, had a very unfortunate case last night of a gentleman who was in his mid-50s who died from a cancer, again, that was strongly linked to dietary and lifestyle factors and therefore potentially preventable. And I, you know, once again, I was speaking to his young son, who was in his 20s, and looking into this young man's eyes and having to deliver the news that your father's probably not going to make it through this, and seeing the hurt, seeing the pain, it's just heartbreaking.
It is, well, there's no pun intended there either. It is heartbreaking, and his heart was broken by
absolutely
his lifestyle, unfortunately. Okay, so 5 years ago we talked about rethinking food and how people should look at their food differently, not necessarily that it tastes good, but are they being nourished from it? And I really enjoyed that conversation. Have you seen any changes in the last 5 years?
I mean, I have seen some changes, but certainly not nearly enough. I mean, again, sadly, as I was leaving the hospital this morning, I stopped by the cafeteria to just, you know, grab some things. And again, there were people in line buying the usual markers of the American standard diet, bacon, sausage, you know, eggs, and so forth. And I just, it was so ironic and just personally painful to be standing in a hospital watching people eating food that is essentially destroying their bodies. So, you know, there has been some change. Clearly, the knowledge and attention that's being paid to plant-based lifestyle and eating and the importance of changing one's diet is more widely known. There are more people who are changing their diets every day. It used to be that, you know, vegan, the word vegan was a strange word to people, whereas now you say vegan and people immediately know what you're talking about, and they don't think that you're from another country, let alone outer space. So yes, there have been positive changes, but again, not nearly enough. And I think a big part of that is because the traditional American and Western approach to food, as we spoke about last time, tends to look at food as a hedonistic experience, meaning that here's an opportunity to sort of indulge yourself and immerse yourself in some kind of gustatory pleasure, when, you know, there's no question that we want the act of eating to be pleasant. But the primary purpose of eating, again, as we discussed last time, is really to serve as a means of delivering important and necessary nutrients to our bodies. But that fact is often completely lost, or certainly overshadowed by the idea that people just want to have a pleasurable experience and really not pay attention to whether or not they're actually getting, you know, the appropriate kinds of nutrients and enough of those nutrients.
All right, let's delve into some other topics. The Affordable Care Act came into play a few years ago.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And now our government is wanting to rewrite that into the Affordable Health Care Act.
Which
we learned so many
misnomer.
Things that, like, people didn't realize that Obamacare was the Affordable Health Care Act. All kind of crazy things. I personally feel that there was a large group of people who just didn't want a black man to have a legacy, and they're doing whatever they can to turn that around.
There is no question that that is absolutely a part of, a large part of why the Republicans are so determined to try and erase President Obama's legacy as manifested by the Affordable Care Act. But, you know, with here in America, it's one simple axiom that you always have to pay attention to is simply follow the money. And the biggest reason that the Republicans want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, you know, also known as Obamacare, is the fact that in order to finance the Affordable Care Act that provided health care to millions of Americans who had been, you know, traditionally either underinsured, uninsured, or uninsurable, was that there was a tax placed on the top 10% of income earners. There's a graduated tax that all Americans earning more than $200,000 a year have to pay to help support and finance the Affordable Care Act. And again, the more money you make, for instance, if you make like the current occupant of the White House, you know, $100 million a year, you pay a substantially higher portion of taxes. And the bottom line is that if the Republicans are successful in repealing the Affordable Care Act, that is going to translate into a $600 billion tax cut for the top 10% of income earners in the United States. And that is the probably single biggest reason that they are determined to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, it's very interesting to me that while President Obama was in office, all the Republicans had to do was, you know, call it Obamacare or say, hey, look, this is something this black man is trying to do. And a lot of Americans with, you know, racial issues never even stopped to think about what they were considering. They were just against it because, you know, they don't want anything to be administered or mandated by an African-American man. But now that he's out of office, what you're seeing at these town halls is that when these representatives talk to their constituents about repealing the benefits that people have gained in the Affordable Care Act, suddenly they are furious. Because once they actually stop to consider what is being offered to them and provided to them via the Affordable Care Act, they like it. They like the fact that they now have insurance that allows them to see doctors on a regular basis without having to, you know, mortgage their home. They like the fact that they can keep their children on their insurance until the kids are out of college. They like the fact they can no longer be kicked off of insurance for having pre-existing conditions or prevented from getting insurance in the first place because of pre-existing conditions. So, you know, President Obama, unfortunately, was a very convenient straw man for the Republican Party, and they're finding that now that he's no longer in office and people are actually considering what is proffered to them through the Affordable Care Act, they really like those benefits and don't want to part with them.
It's a very civilized concept, insurance for everyone.
Yes. Yes, and I was just going to say that it's been particularly horrifying for me to hear some of these Republican representatives literally say things like, you know, healthcare is not a right, and that, you know, good people don't have pre-existing conditions, and that, you know, if you can't afford insurance, then you don't deserve it. I mean, those are just hideous, heinous, you know, inhuman statements. But these are the things that these people truly believe. And, you know, I think the only recourse we have is to vote these horrible, horrible people out of office.
Absolutely. I think it was it Miss USA who also said that recently, that healthcare is a privilege?
Wow.
Now, there's an authority. Okay. Anyway, I know that the Affordable Care Act, unfortunately, is different from state to state, and some states have had some really good results with it, and some others haven't. So what have you seen with it in your experience over the last few years?
Well, yeah, and that's, I'm happy to talk about that because, you know, we talked about the kind of medicine I practice, but one thing that we didn't discuss is where I practice my medicine.
Yep.
And ever since I finished residency, I have deliberately chosen to work in clinics that are free clinics for, well, you know, before the Affordable Care Act, it was for uninsured patients, and in public hospitals for low-income and underinsured individuals. And there is no question but that since the Affordable Care Act has been in place, people who previously were not able to see, to either have a private physician or see that doctor on a regular basis simply because they couldn't afford to pay for their health care and were therefore forced to wait until they were so sick they had no choice but to come into an emergency room. That a lot of that has changed. We have seen where, you know, a large percentage of poorer populations were presenting with end-stage diseases because of their inability to care for themselves or to obtain care and manage their health issues, that they're, that process is being reversed, that now people are able, through the Affordable Care Act, to see a doctor on a regular basis, to keep their medical conditions managed as opposed to allowing them to reach a point where they have no choice but to be carried into an emergency room. And it's significantly improved the overall health profile of the patients that I've seen in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And there's also no question that hospitals, which frequently were operating in the red because they were being forced to treat so many people who couldn't pay them and were therefore in danger of closing, are now on a much firmer financial footing. And so that you have hospitals which otherwise would not be able to remain open being financially solvent and being available to people in areas where they live, as opposed to before, where we were seeing that these hospitals closing and people being literally, both figuratively and literally, further from care simply because there was no hospital in their neighborhood or region simply because those hospitals had closed due to financial difficulties. So it's made a huge difference, and that's why, you know, the American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, and physicians across the country have come out decidedly in favor of maintaining the Affordable Care Act and are horrified by the so-called American Health Care Act, which is health care in name only. In fact, it does not provide health care for people. It provides the illusion of health care, because if you listen to the Republicans when they talk about this so-called American Health Care Act, what they say is that it provides access to health care, meaning that theoretically people will be able to access insurance, but the kinds of premiums and deductibles that they would have to pay means that, practically speaking, they won't have health care. It's sort of like, you know, if I tell someone who's, you know, a homeless person in Bel Air, well, you have access to the homes here. Yeah, but they cost a couple $1 million. They can't afford it. You know, so it's a sick and cruel joke to talk about access to health, to so-called health care that is completely unaffordable.
Well, I always like to look at the big picture and look at history. And I think all of us in the United States, especially our leaders and our politicians, really need to look history in the face and see what this country was built on. So,
right.
You know, just briefly, we started by blasting away a people. We just ran over the Native American Indians and took over. Okay, not a very pretty
thing.
Well,
and in many cases committed deliberate genocide so that we could take over their land. Yeah, I mean, this was not a benign or sort of process that occurred by second intention. I mean, you know, our government did things like deliver smallpox-infected blankets to Indian tribes with the deliberate goal of wiping them out so that their lands would then become available for European settlers. Yeah, so.
So I want to have a certain amount of pride in this country, and I've learned I have a wonderful life and a lot of opportunity. I know that that's not true of everyone, but the history is not pretty. And of course, then we had slaves in this country, and I believe we still do have slaves in this country. Some of them have come in from other countries illegally that are working in pockets that we don't aware about. And then many people are working for such small wages that they're practically slaves.
That is so true. And I also think that we have, to some extent, exported our slavery because we have manufacturing being done in countries where people are virtual slaves and are working for in such onerous conditions and for such meager sums that they are effectively wage slaves. And, you know, and while, you know, we may not personally, quote unquote, own those slaves, we certainly benefit from their abuse and maltreatment by going out and buying the sneakers and handbags and clothes manufactured by these people.
You know, until we realize that when we make life better for everyone with opportunities and a baseline of simple rights, food and healthcare and a place to live and access to education, that's going to elevate everyone's lives. And
absolutely.
When we take these rights and opportunities and benefits and handouts, as some people may call them, we're only asking for more crime, more hate, more violence. And
that is so true. Yes. And, and the other thing that people, you know, don't, and this is the part that just has never ceased to amaze me, is that somehow we look at the corporate giveaways that we give, you know, wealthy Americans and wealthy corporations as somehow they're right. But when, you know, low-cum individuals ask for, you know, a similar consideration, it somehow seemed to be an inappropriate request or, you know, as a welfare. But it's, you know, we allow corporations to write off taxes and get, you know, money from the government in the form of tax breaks for, you know, a variety of behaviors. You know, farmers can get government subsidies for raising certain crops or for even not using their land to raise crops, but somehow that's seen as being appropriate. Yet when a mother with, you know, two children needs help in the form of food stamps, that's considered to be, you know, something that's just, you know, wrong or a sign of poor character. And it's really twisted the way we tend to look at things. I often point out to people that if you look at the time period in this nation when our population had the highest general level of a standard of living and the greatest social mobility in terms of, you know, going to college, obtaining higher education, finding good paying jobs that allowed you to take care of your children and buy a home, it was a period of time when we had a very different corporate and individual tax structure. You know, everyone paid a somewhat larger percentage of their income in taxes, but the general benefit to society as a whole was much greater. And since the 1980s, when Reagan and his myth of trickle-down economics took hold, the general standard of living for most Americans has markedly declined. And whereas the top, you know, 10% of Americans has their wealth has accumulated to a monstrous degree, but in general, most Americans are doing much worse. And it's a simple matter of you get what you pay for. If we don't pay for anything, but allow instead, you know, a few individuals to accumulate obscene amounts of wealth, we all suffer as a consequence, except for the very wealthy.
Well, I'd like to think that if everybody was eating a plant-based diet, we'd get a lot smarter and we could make better decisions. But I don't think that that's the only thing that's going to do it, unfortunately.
No, but it would go a long way towards helping, because for one thing, it would change the complexion of our general health, as opposed to spending trillions of dollars every year on what are, without question, preventable health care issues. We would have a lot more money to spend on helping people to remain healthy instead of struggling to try and retrieve their health once it's lost.
I've been using an app called ResistBot lately. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No, I haven't.
It's on my phone, ResistBot. I recommend people look it up. It makes it very easy to send letters to your senators and representatives in Congress. And I've been sending one or two a day. I'm like going nutty. And what they do is they type up your thing in a letter and fax it. And they, you can even add your signature to it. So it looks really like a real letter, because it is, but it's so much easier to do. Anyway, I bring it up because in talking about insurance and the cost of healthcare, if we only talked about educating people to eat healthier, and if we only changed the balance of food production so that healthy plant foods were the least expensive options and made them more accessible, we could dramatically reduce the cost of health care, and this insurance debacle wouldn't be the mess that it is.
That is absolutely 100% true. There's no question that that's true.
So everybody write your representatives and say we need to be talking about plant-based diets to bring health care costs down.
Whew. Absolutely. And I would say at the end of each letter, just make a note. I'm paying attention to how you vote, and please keep in mind that I also vote. And if I don't like your vote, I'm going to vote against you in the next election.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is one thing that these representatives do pay attention to, because the fact is the only way they can keep their jobs is if they keep getting reelected. And if they know that people are actually paying attention to the way that they vote and will punish them if they don't vote properly, that is the only way we're going to change our government.
Exactly. Well, you know, it all comes down to capitalism, unfortunately. And my hope for the future is to find a better system than capitalism, because capitalism isn't working.
Well, I would agree with you. And one of the fundamental problems is that it's built on a fundamental impulse is selfishness.
It's built on exploitation, Milton.
Right, exactly. And it's
exploitation.
As a zero-sum game, in that, you know, I can't advance if I don't take something from you. And that's really sad and unfortunate.
Yes. Okay. One last thing. I want to end on a happy, delicious note. So have you had anything interesting, yummy in the vegan world lately in your travels?
Oh, my goodness. You know, there's a new vegan chain called New Vegan, NU Vegan, that has two outlets here in the D.C. metro area. One is in College Park in Maryland near the University of Maryland College. And then there's another branch that's in Washington, D.C. on Georgia Avenue. And the food there is just absolutely amazing. And I've been taking some samples of their food to work to share with my colleagues who are, I mean, absolutely love it. And, you know, whereas before they thought vegan food simply because they hadn't experienced it, were concerned that, oh, I'm not going to like it, or, you know, this is something strange. They realized, my goodness, the food is delicious. It's satisfying. And it's actually good for me. And they realized, you know what? I can be more plant-based if I choose to. And so that's a very positive thing.
That's fantastic. Dr. Milton Mills, thank you so much for this time. I love you and love talking to you, and I look forward to reading more of your rants on Facebook.
Well, then there will be more.
Yes, unfortunately. Okay, be well. Thank you for joining me, and it's all about food.
My pleasure, Karen. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Whew, that was Dr. Milton Mills. Isn't he awesome? I think so.